When I returned from our holiday, it was the first time I think I've ever come back consciously from a holiday. One of the earmarks of holidays is that you become unconscious. You let go of your worries, you let go of the world, you let go of the stuff you have to think about, and ideally you just have a good time. It has been a pattern in my life that almost every time I come back from a holiday there's a disaster, a flood. I can go on, there's a long list of things that tend to greet me when I return. But on this trip, for whatever reason, I never really left myself while I was traveling. I didn't need a vacation from me. I needed and only wanted to be with me. And of course, when you begin to identify with yourself as consciousness and as this vast ground of existence, there's no vacation to take from that. The vacations that we take are from our ego, our worry, our conceptual self. And we all have hungers to get away from that self, and usually in our culture we get a week or two a year. And when you come back from that vacation from yourself, what do you get greeted with but an onslaught of all your worries, of all your tensions, of all your old stuff? Because you've really not paid attention to them, they've had an opportunity to gather their forces. A lot of people I know can barely go on vacation because they just cannot afford to relax their hold on egocentric thinking. They spend their time on the beach thinking about what they'll do when they get back, planning the future. Usually there's a pattern to vacations. You probably are familiar with it. The first few days you're winding down, you have about 2 days of real joy, and then you start worrying about coming back. And so those 2 days of joy are really pretty much what people get, and mostly that's about sleeping in, eating late, long brunch, just being with somebody else, or even with yourself. Just this pleasure of basking in simplicity. Whatever it is that one does in the middle of a vacation is essentially what one can do when you meditate. Sitting down for an hour a day, a half an hour a day, is the greatest vacation you can give yourself. Because for that short period of time, you step away from ego. You don't have to travel to the Bahamas, you don't have to go to Hawaii, you don't have to go to anywhere, you just go to yourself. Which is essentially where you're getting to when you get to Hawaii or the Bahamas or wherever you go. When you finally get there and let go of all of your stuff, where are you? You're with you. But you're with you relaxed. You at peace. You not thinking about work that you left behind or work that you're going back to. It's just this wonderful moment of separation from all of that. Meditation is the exact same experience. And it's a hell of a lot cheaper. And you can go every day. The truth is, you don't even have to wait to meditate. You can do it right now. Meaning anytime you want. Just, it's a kind of deep inner vacation that you can take all day long. The fearful part for all of us about taking an endless vacation is that how do we get our work done? What do we do about providing for the food on the table, taking care of all of our issues, the stuff we need to worry about all the time? Well, while I was on my vacation, I didn't think about any of that, and it was wonderful. On the plane back, I knew what I was walking into. I had an unbelievable amount of demand coming at me. I had a screenplay I had to finish. I had just gotten, even in the last 2 days of my trip, telephone calls from LA that I had just gotten a new job that had to start right away. And I think I've told you this. If not, I'm doing a musical of Ghost. And we had a composer who wanted to do it, someone I didn't particularly want. And I went to have dinner with the producers, and they were trying to sell me on this guy who had flown in to LA to meet me for the next night. So all of these things were converging and were producing tension, because I knew I didn't know how I was going to arrive at the level of capacity that was being demanded and was literally waiting for me as the plane set down. At one point in the middle of my vacation, I began to read this script that I was trying to finish. And I read about 12 pages of it, and it was the worst thing I'd ever read in my entire life. So I said, I'm not reading another page, because I was having too good a time. I just put it away. I said, this is not the place. But it was in my brain, so I knew when that plane settled down here that I had this horrible script to finish, this new script which was very demanding and is in a very interesting story in and of itself. Just the brief contours of it is it's a movie I desperately wanted to write 4 years ago that I pursued like I've never pursued anything, and I didn't get it. They gave it to somebody else. It has great connotations and deep permutations of unhappy storytelling. But the miracle of it is that it arrived back in my life, the same movie. Came back, they said, we want you to try this, try it all over again, because nobody's gotten it right. I couldn't believe it had arrived back. I come back into Los Angeles with a level of, in a sense, fear of demand that I hadn't had to deal with before at that level. But I knew there was no way to deal with it. And in a way, there was no way to do it other than do it. So I did something which is, I won't say completely new to me, but I have to say truly demonstrative of an evolving capacity, which is, I said, I'm going to surrender. I'm going to just be. I'm just going to do what I can do. And there's something very satisfying about that feeling. But it didn't work at 4 o'clock in the morning when I woke up in a state of complete panic. And I just didn't know how to fix this screenplay that wasn't working. I didn't know how to meet everything. I got blindsided by my unconsciousness in the middle of the night. And I thought it was a bad thing because the panic was so intense. But what it did, and I have to explain this because I think it's part of how life works. The panic was so powerful that something went into gear inside me, And it just said, I have to take every ounce of energy and every ounce of creativity that I can find and apply it to this screenplay that's not working. And I just sat there. And all of a sudden, there was like this explosion of clarity of what I could do to fix this screenplay. And I grabbed a piece of paper, and I just started writing and writing and writing. I went out to my office about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I just spent 2 days, including Christmas morning, Christmas afternoon, writing. I had every reason not to. These were holidays. I had every reason to go. There are other things to do, but I fit all of it in. We had a wonderful Christmas morning. But I worked and I worked and I worked, and I just listened to this extraordinary clarity that came from my panic. And I know, I could tell as I was doing it, I had been given through panic, if you will, what I needed. And that what got me to it, what got me to the door of what I needed, was the intensity of suffering, of not knowing how to fix this piece of material on which much of what I felt my career would depend. I have had this panic arrive throughout my life. And almost every single time, it has brought me what I need. It has brought me the solution to the problem. Why do I have to go through panic? I don't know. Why do I have to get to this point of fear of failure? I don't know. But it seems to be programmed into the human condition. It focuses us like nothing else. It energizes us. It calls into the depth of the universe for help. It asks in ways that we never seem to be able to get to in the normal course of events. Something in me was crying out, and something came to save me, to solve the problem. It truly did. It changed the entire nature of the screenplay, and I wrote this in 2 days, 3 days, showed it to my kids, who are my first line of criticism, and they couldn't believe the change. Neither could I. It was a completely different piece of material. It suddenly had what one would call depth, meaning I had found the underpinning of the story. I had had the surface. Now I found the thing that pulled it all together. And how did I find it? Through suffering. And then, what was my response to suffering? Work. Really hard, intense work at what I would call inappropriate times. Christmas was not the time to work, but Christmas was the day it arrived. What can I do? You work because it's in front of you, because there it is. You can say to yourself, this isn't good timing. But where does that get you? If I hadn't sat down that morning, I would have missed the whole thing. If I had said, I want it on my terms, which is the way I've always lived. Rudy said, that's your problem, Bruce. You always want it on your terms. He was absolutely right. It took me years to get that. It's not on your terms. It's on the universe's terms. And the universe is in intimate relationship with us. Our resistance to it is what causes our suffering and our failure in the world. Our arriving at a place of saying yes, even to your own panic, of allowing that panic to come in, not that you have a lot of choice. But when it comes in, rather than taking a drink, going back to bed, taking a Xanax, whatever it is one does, know that it's the universe moving and guiding you in a very serious and profound way. And follow what it says. The next day I sat down and started working on the new screenplay because I had to prepare for meetings with the director. I just worked and worked. It was just time. That's all it was. Time. Follow the process. And I worked and I worked. And then I had a meeting with this composer who I had all this resistance to. I sat down with this guy. He's a wonderful guy, it turns out. The two of us, we looked at each other and we were like brothers. I've never had an experience like this ever. I knew this guy in such depth, and he knew me, and we felt such unbelievable kinship like that. We were hugging through the whole dinner. We were just so happy to meet each other. This is the guy I didn't want at all. I didn't even know him. Why didn't I want him? His name is Henry Krieger. He wrote Dream Girls, which for me is, I mean, it's a wonderful, it's a score that I thought was all about yelling, and I wanted melody. And as much as that yelling was there, it's also a score in which that yelling had unbelievable emotional power. And in the end, I think Ghost really will be served more by emotional truth than just melodic line. And now I believe he'll be able to give me both. But the great thing is we'll be able to talk about it and collaborate because I stayed open to the meeting. I walked in with an open heart rather than a closed fist. I realized literally instantaneously that this was the right person. I realized that the universe was pushing this and that all I could do was obstruct it. And so something told me immediately, get out of the way. Is it the right thing? I don't know. But does it feel right? Yes. Does it feel like flow? Yes. It feels like being in the moment with what is. And what is sometimes is panic, sometimes is the last thing you want to arrive. But every time you open to the panic and you open to the last thing you want to arrive, realizing that it's there, what happens is that the universe carries you in ways you cannot imagine. It's how success happens in the world. It's how good things happen in your life because you've accepted the very thing you want to reject. You say yes to the very thing that looks the least appealing. And why do you say yes to it? Because it's in front of you. That's why. Nothing complicated about that. There's nothing that you don't understand. It's there. And if you keep looking at what's there and saying, no, no, that's not how it should be. That's not how I want it. It should have come from there. It should have been this way. It should have been that. That's when you don't get what you're supposed to have. What you're supposed to have is the thing that's there. And it may not look right, but what's it not looking right to is your mind. And what does your mind understand about that much? It's so superficial, it's so shallow, it has so little understanding of what's right. It doesn't know because it's not supposed to know. That's not what the mind is for. The mind is to tell you simple things. Don't step in the puddle. Don't jump in the water if you don't know how deep it is. There are things the mind is supposed to protect you from. But even then, if the building is on fire and you are sitting there and your mind is going, oh, yeah, 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 I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do, that's not the mind you want to listen to. The mind you want to listen to is this quiet voice that says, put something over your nose and crawl on the floor out of the building. Whatever that mind is that tells you quietly what to do is the mind you listen to. And that mind is not your ego mind. It is this very simple, quiet knowing that filters through your brain into this tool of mind and gives you guidance. Guidance is always available. Our whole lives, if we paid attention to our innermost being, to ourselves, would be guided. But here's the important thing. Most of us make huge mistakes along the way. We pay attention to all the wrong things. We do the wrong things. We make, in a way, messes of our lives. Very few lives come together the way we want them to. Some do. Some really do. But most lives are relatively sloppy, fairly superficial, unsatisfying, incomplete, and can end that way. You can actually end your life with a very sloppy experience, a very haphazard, this was my life. And you look at it and like, ugh, like who would care about it? You know, who would want that life? And the truth is, in one split second of deep consciousness, your entire melodrama of a life can become a novel. it can become this beautiful, extraordinary tale, full of confusion, full of wrong choices, full of lessons that don't add up, and then all of a sudden, in one moment of, it all adds up. It all comes together. You suddenly see how every single mistake has led you to this moment. And the moment of awakening to what is, to your truth, to your being, to your present moment, whatever leads you to that will have proven to be brilliant, brilliant living. Maybe all sloppy and awful, but because it leads you to yourself, because it leads you to awakening, because it leads you to this extraordinary sense of the eternal within the mundane, you will see that it will have all been purposeful and brilliantly written, because it leads you to the one thing that life is about, which is this sense of this moment, the present tense being. Finding that is what life is all about. Going on a trip to Hawaii to find it, expensive, may not even be there. Sitting down to meditate every day, it's an opportunity to find this very thing. Can you sit for 30 years and not find it? Yes. I tell you that because I did that. I mean, I find it for moments, but I never knew what I was finding, so therefore I didn't get it. But then there comes, after 30 years of pursuing something, an incredible and very simple realization. And that is the one I've talked about now for some time, that you are already the thing you're looking for. That this being that you're going to Hawaii and the Bahamas and meditating to find is not lost. It's not to be found. It's there, even as you're sitting in this very second. How can it be lost? It can never be lost. Only you can be looking in the wrong direction. And when you suddenly understand that, it reshapes your existence. It reshapes everything about your life. And it takes the most haphazard of existences and makes it beautiful. Makes it sublime. Your existence, for all of its faults and all of its difficulties, have led you to the ultimate truth, and therefore every step you took was the right step, even though you didn't know it. You will come to feel that, you will come to realize that you are on this remarkable journey. And that journey doesn't have to go anywhere to find its conclusion, except it leads you to this very moment. And in this very moment, you realize that you've been on the right, you've been in this moment, if you will, the whole time. Because where else can you be? It's the absurdity of my trying to teach a class, of anybody trying to teach anybody anything, because the thing I'm trying to teach you to arrive at is where you're sitting as I speak. It makes me feel like an idiot, because I have nothing to give you, literally nothing to give you. You sit here in class like you're taking something. What are you taking? You can't take the thing you are. All I can do is share this and be this, and in the process of being it, to whatever degree I can just be, when you sit with me, you're sitting with being, which is what you are. So in a sense, you're sitting with your very self. The great gurus, and I don't claim to be any of that, but the great gurus are such profound sons of being, illuminations of existence, that when you would sit in their presence, you would feel immediately home. You would feel present. you would feel their being as your being. But the only thing they wanted to do in their huge expression of light was to let you know that the light you were experiencing from them is experienced by the light inside you. You are the light. You are the light right now as I'm talking. And if you're listening to me with your brain, you're dialoguing about this. But if you're quiet inside, you know it's true. And I can tell when I sit with you by the joy in you, by the availability, by the relaxation, by the vacationing aspect inside you, whether you are being or trying to have a good time. I hate watching people on vacation who are, okay, time to go in the ocean, okay, get the boogie board, okay, do this, do that, and everybody is running like mad to have a good time. Everybody. And then you see people who are just sitting on the beach, and they're there. And probably they know deep inside they didn't have to come to Hawaii to do it. They know it. But our culture makes us think we have to pay for that trip. I'm telling you, you're there right now. Lie down, relax, let the sun shine on you. You don't got anything to do except bask in your own light. Any questions? I never know if there's no questions because I've talked so long, or if you really literally have no questions.
I have a question, this is my time putting it in words, which is to how does one sort of keep yourself open to what's coming and available? In my own life, there's this to be done with the house, there's this to be done, what should I be thinking about next in the career, this sort of that sense of what, as you sit in that space of openness to how to best address what best serves your coming life.
Well, part of it, Terry, is not to dismiss the idea of thinking about it. Thinking about it is completely natural. That's what the mind is for. Okay, I could have this job or that job, or there's no job coming, so I've got to find some way to start looking for a job, or whatever that thing is completely appropriate. Thinking about it. Here's the problem. Worrying about it. You don't need to worry about it. And it comes down to a kind of trust. But let me even go further. Sometimes worrying about it is the thing that makes you think about it. It makes you do the thing you have to do. So you'll see, I have to worry about this. Now I'm going to worry. And what it keeps coming back to, further and further back to, is your process is your process. So do your thing. Worry, fear, panic, whatever it may be, but watch it as a process and go, I see what's going on here. That's all. It's just like being aware of you, yourself, watching Terry Clodio at work and being, in a way, quite fascinated by it. Because Terry has a rather interesting adaptation to the universe. How does Terry deal with these things? Some places very well, some places not so well. Can you fix some of that? Yeah. Can you fix other parts of it? No. Because you're hardwired to be Terry Clodio. So you finally go, this is what Terry Clodio does. And then that is an enormous relief. You go, oh. Okay, this is how I have to go through it. It's about arriving at a place of such deep acceptance that even all of your crap and all of your shame and all the stuff that's part of who you are is just part of the enormous, extraordinary reality of your truth. And you just go, And by accepting it, in a way you fall in love with you, with who you are as you are. And the stuff you can't love, you fix. And the stuff you can't fix, you go, oh well. And then you just go on with your day. It keeps coming back to something that is so extraordinarily simple, which this is what it is. This is it. Period. This is it. It's not other. It's just accepting the truth of what appears. And what appears is the wholeness of you, the fullness thereof. You are who you are. For better, for worse, it's your existence. And all you have to do, and you know this, is go, ah. That's it. Ah. And suddenly you're filled with wonder at your own complexity, at your own beauty and insipid nature. All of that simultaneously. The greatness and the mundaneness of your truth. And there you are. So in the end, it's you're doing exactly what you're doing. You know, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. Nothing changes except you are deeply awakened to that. You go, huh. So you walk through your day, even in your own limitation, in a state of wonder. You go. And half the day you won't be that. Half the day you'll be asleep, or you'll be so working that you don't have time to be in a state of wonder. But any time you stop to be conscious, just be aware, you go, oh yeah. And it's like rediscovering over and over the wonder of being Terry Clodio. Over and over, all day long. I get to find the wonder of being Bruce Rubin, which in fact proves out for me on a pretty regular basis to be wonderful. The thing I'm finding in being myself and the thing that you're discovering in being yourself has one commonality. It's called being. And it's the being that's wonderful. The specific of the thing we are is changing by the hour, by the second, by the millisecond. But the being is not changing at all. It is an absolute constant, and it is the one thing that unites me and you together, because we share that extraordinary thing of being, and there is some revelation that occurs at certain points along the way that being is singular. That while you are appreciating Terry from your perspective of being, and I'm appreciating Bruce, basically it's the same being in each of us. And when that awakens in us, then we can sit in a class like this and just immerse ourselves in the extraordinary shared experience of being all these different things. You know, and I can sit with people who are suffering, and I know what that suffering is because I am the being that is suffering. I'm observing the suffering. I'm observing the happiness. But I have learned through my own meditative practice to surrender and accept it all as something of extraordinary reality. God's gift. And that's what you do. That's why you teach. Same thing. So there's no wrong move in any of this. There's only doing what you do. You cannot not do what you do. I don't know how it is that we're here. I don't know how we ended up in these sacks with two arms and two legs and this head and this brain and this heart. And I don't know. I can't figure it out. Whatever this is, it's an odd configuration of stuff. But here we are. We're living this thing. And we think it's really important and really meaningful that I get Cheerios for this, and I get an ice cream sundae, and I go to the movies, and I get laid, and all these different things that seem to be part of the human condition. Well, I don't get it, but here we are, and we are seeking it with enormous hunger. So let's do that. Let's watch ourselves doing it, because it's an extraordinary thing. And I will stop at this. Thank you, guys. Oops, Blanche, yeah.
I have a question.
Okay.
I have for brunch is something we need done today, and we're trying to make it as easy for people as possible by asking you to sign up just for 1 or 2 weeks to bring a smaller amount of food than we've ever asked for in the past, and I've crossed juice off the list, so now it's just fruit and coffee cake and cleanup, and we also need people to help keep these plants alive. So I'm leaving tomorrow for New York for 6 weeks, and there will be no one here on a full-time basis to fill in the gaps where Bruce you know, is trying to do it all. So if someone, if four of you, I should say, or five or six of you can volunteer, it would be very much appreciated.
Thank you. Lastly, because I won't know until Tuesday and I meet with this director how much work I have in store exactly, I'm going to hold off Saturday class for the coming week, but hopefully I will begin them again the following week, and I will send out a notice about that. And what I'll be doing is continuing to show DVDs of other teachers so that you guys can be exposed to other people beside me, so that you can see the value of other teaching, so that you can perhaps pursue another teacher if that works for you better than this one, because I don't care where you get it from. I just care that you get it. And I think exposing ourselves to other teachers is valuable for all of us. And at some point I'll show the last DVD of Eckhart. Most of you missed it. Blanche, Josh, and I sat down to watch it, and it was just extraordinary for us. I don't know why it was so powerful, but it was wonderful, and I'd love to show it to those of you who missed it. And then I have, you know, Byron Katie and other teachers who I think will be meaningful to you if you want to avail yourself of that. So I'll let you know. Also, I talked earlier, talked last year about having a all-day retreat, and that too will get scheduled once I understand my own level of demand. Thanks again.